All right, the time is 2 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. A very, very good morning to you all, the Eagle FM listeners, no matter where you are finding yourself. Thank you so much for always choosing us and always listening to us and keeping yourself informed in terms of economic, in terms of entrepreneurship, to speaking about trade and all that beautiful information. Thank you so much for always choosing us. But before, this is Lois Shimi, and I'll be with you until the hour of 7:30, just to give you the usual update, of course, on the entrepreneurship, public policy, trade, economy, all that economy, all that I have to give you as usual. But before I give you that, or before we touch also on the international segment of it, please don't forget to either connect us, with us on our social media platforms, Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newswire page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And of course, do not forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update and, of course, newspaper. And it's now the channel name or handle is that the Eagle FM Media House. Please, Eagle FM Eagle House, or the Eagle FM Media House, please do not forget to rather subscribe and keep yourself informed in terms of economic updates and, of course, the newspaper alerts. And do not forget also to rather download our app, Eagle FM app, on your Google Play Store and, of course, your App Store, and you stay informed wherever you go. Now, to start off internationally, is that The over 1,000, or in Zambia, over 1,000 scheme farmers have benefited from farming equipment provided by the multi-million dollars Green 200 project in Kawambwa district. Now, additionally, the Green 200 agriculture project has created over 2,000 jobs for the local community in Kawambwa. Now, the $43 million agriculture project aimed to position Zambia as one of the grain basket contribution to contributing to food stability in the SADC region. Now, the project manager Gary Birk has stated that so far 500 hectares of soybeans field and 580 hectares of seeds maize field have been cultivated out of the 2,500 hectare farm project. Now, he added that another 1,025 hectares are under irrigation, utilizing 16 center pivots. Each covering 65 hectares. Now, on that, BAC has also noted that with electricity expected to be available within the next 6 weeks, more hectares of land will be developed. We might take a listen to this.
Known for its favorable weather pattern and fertile soils, this massive agriculture project has been developed by Jordan Valley on behalf of the government. The idea is to help create food stability, not only for Zambia, but the entire SADC region.
You know, when we initially started this, the idea was to have more projects like this in more provinces, because this is like an anchor farm in Luapula. I think with the cold rooms, the silos, the post-harvest facilities that we have, we are now able to collect a lot of grain and store it and make it available to the market whenever the market requires it.
About $43 million United States dollars has been spent to develop the 2,500 hectares of land with different crop varieties.
I think overall it's got a huge impact, because they are now able to produce more than just a lima at a time. You know, so in the past they were doing one lima or two lima. There's some of them that's even doing up to 10 hectares. So there's definitely an increase in the amount of land they can prepare and the amount of crops they can plant. So not only has it got a positive impact on the local community, it also has an impact on the food security of Zambia.
And in order to help small-scale farmers improve their agriculture production, the project is renting out agriculture equipment to them. Ruth Nandazi is one such beneficiary of the agriculture support equipment from the Green 2000 project.
All right. And moving on to still in Zambia, is that four water utility companies across the country are said to benefit from a World Bank funded water project worth over $33 million. Now, Rupura Water and Sanitation Company Managing Director has confirmed that the utility will receive $5.9 million to improve water supply and sanitation services in the region.
To ensure everyone's access to safe and affordable drinking water, adequate sanitation and hygiene, and improved water quality, the Rupura Water and Sanitation Company will soon implement a $5.9 million World Bank-funded water reclamation project in the province. This came to light when the Parliamentary Committee on Parastatal Bodies was on a working visit to the water utility company.
We have been running with the World Bank to secure some funding. Suffice to mention that as of last week, that's when the World Bank board of directors now approved this financing mechanism for Zambia. So under that umbrella, it's about $3 million to cater for four water utility companies. And our component as well, water that is going to come is about $5.9 million. So that has now been, last week it was approved by the World Bank Board. So what is the next step is to just have the financing agreement signed between Zambia and the World Bank. Then a subsidiary agreement between the government and the World Bank, then we begin to access the funding. We hope we can begin to access the funding by end of third quarter.
Meanwhile, during the tour of the Rupura Water Wastewater Treatment Plant, the Parliamentary Committee on Parastatal Bodies Chairperson, Dr. Shitalo Chilufya, urged the utility company to spearhead the efforts of government in providing access to clean and safe water.
So what Rupura Water and the Sanitation Company needs to do is to spearhead the efforts of government to ensure that access to clean and safe water through proper infrastructure, good network, and overall good guidance is assured for the people. And there must be efforts in ensuring that there is a peripheral network beyond the network that they have built from the treatment plant to ensure that our people access to clean and safe water.
All right, there you have it. Now to the time is 10 minutes in the half, 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that the North African country recently signed investment state deals with France, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, just to name a few, and step up the efforts to boost local industries to help ease the impact of President Donald Trump's trade tariffs. We might take a listen to this update.
Is in talks with the U.S. to review the 10% tariff slammed by President Donald Trump. According to the Egyptian government, bilateral trade in 2024 stands at about $8.6 billion, nearly $6.1 billion of U.S. exports to Egypt, with a 36% increase year-on-year, against $1.8 billion Egyptian exports to the U.S., mainly in textiles and ready-made garments.
The direct trade impact is minimal on Egypt compared to other countries. The textile industry will be affected, but negotiations are underway to protect this industry. The fear, however, is that the high U.S. tariffs on other countries will lead to global inflation, which means our imports of basic commodities, food and energy, will be more expensive and pose real threats on our stricken economy.
The Suez Canal revenue, a major source of hard currency, can also be negatively affected if the U.S. tariffs leads to a slowdown in global trade. Trump's actions have caused anxiety in Cairo, as Prime Minister Mustafa Madbouly hinted at an economic policy shift away from the U.S.
This is an all-out trade war. We are witnessing a new era. All the trade principles that we have known for decades are being destroyed. We have to focus on merging with a wider range of trading partners. It's very important to join different alliances, to bond with strong and loyal partners in the next period.
A flurry of activity followed the statement. In Cairo, Egypt signed $8 billion worth of investment deals with France, which had earlier called on the EU to detach itself from the US. Also, a Gulf tour by President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi saw an influx of up to $70 billion in new investments from Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait. Meanwhile, the business community here believes the U.S. tariffs could actually be an opportunity for Cairo to lure in foreign firms seeking to relocate to low-duty states like Egypt.
Egypt is well equipped. We have the infrastructure. We have the cheap skilled labor. We have a logistical location. Egypt can be a hub. We also have free trade and zero tariff agreements with about 120 countries, including in the Middle East and in Africa like the COMESA, which will guarantee free access to all these markets, not just the US, for manufacturers in Egypt.
And the Prime Minister has doubled down on this idea.
International reports say there are countries that could benefit from these challenges, and one of them is Egypt. In these circumstances, we will continue to support our industries and will provide all possible incentives for localization and to attract foreign direct investments.
All right, there you have it, listeners. Now, to move on to the next item is that some experts argue that the silence reflects the complex balance African nations must maintain in their relationship with the U.S. And, of course, others say Africans' muted response is aimed to achieving long-term strategies to reduce dependence on volatile Western markets. There we can take a listen to this.
Primarily targeting specific African exports like Lesotho's textiles and South Africa's auto industry have sparked discussions among trade experts and international observers. Yet absent from the tariff debate are the voices of African leaders themselves. Experts seem to suggest that this silence reflects the complex balance African nations must maintain in their relationship with the U.S.
A lot of what you will refer to as African experts are influenced by American soft power, and that means that it becomes increasingly difficult for Africa to come out strongly to try and urge America to rethink its approach.
But to some, Africa's muted response is a balancing act aimed at achieving long-term strategies to reduce dependency on volatile Western markets.
We are discouraging transactionalism and bilateralism. We want to have a unified, long-term strategic approach in engaging not just the U.S. but all our partners across the world.
The coming months will likely reveal more about the strategies African nations adopt in response to the U.S. tariffs.
For now, the continent appears to be trading cautiously, with focus directed towards the African Continental Free Trade Area to boost intra-African trade. Daniel Arap Moi, CGTN, Nairobi, Kenya.
Let's bring in Sambele Swana, a governance expert and political analyst. He joins us live via Zoom from Muldersdrift in South Africa. Sambele, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us here on Africa Live. Sambele, since U.S. President Donald Trump's new tariffs hit, what has been the impact on African economies?
Thank you. The impact is for now muted. It's not significant on the ground. Given that Trump has been in office for the past 4 months and he suspended his tariff war in its full scale for 90 days. So we will see later, but the immediate impact, which will probably feel it next year, says that the GDP growth rate for Africa is going to be reduced in the coming year.
All right, Sam, is there any concrete or apparent strategy, let me put it like that, by African nations on dealing with the new U.S. tariffs? And what's your take on the African response so far as the turmoil over U.S. tariffs continues?
Personally, the professional and trade reports that have been written, what I say professional opinions and advice written by top law firms, top audit firms, strategy firms, and by trade associations, has indicated that the best strategy is actually to prepare for diversification of markets, including the strengthening of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. So the Africans are taking a medium to longer term view of this. That is where we are for now. I think they are going to take a medium to longer term view of this entire thing. In the short term, bearing in mind that the U.S. trade is only 3% of African GDP, so we are not as dependent in terms of trade on the U.S. as the U.S. might like us to be.
All right, Sam, let's talk about that long term now. What should we expect in the long term in terms of impact of the U.S. tariffs on the ordinary citizen, the common man, African citizens?
The impact on African citizens is going to come not necessarily on the basis of things happening in Africa, but on the basis of things happening on world commodity markets, the prices of oil, the prices of agricultural products which we sell and make money out of in the world market, the availability of finance for development. Although, I mean, in your own report, you can see that money is already pouring into nations like Egypt from other sources other than the U.S. We've seen the same thing here in South Africa. So the GDP growth rate, the reduction in the GDP growth rate, which is not too big, but it will have some cooling effect on our ability to spend money as citizens of Africa.
All right, Sandy, I know you touched on it a little bit in your initial answer, but with the U.S. imposing tariffs on its major trading partners, including China, what's the likely trickle-down impact on the rest of the world? How do you see it?
What is happening with this so-called trade war is that you are going to see changes in with respect to payment systems. I think the changes in the payment system from SWIFT to the Chinese payment system, that is going. It's a matter of calculating the percentages there. The attitude of the U.S. towards IMF, World Bank, and, I mean, recently the Asia Development Bank, where development finance, certain nations are being, in some ways, being excluded from third world finance or emerging markets finance. And then lastly will be the prices of commodities. But I think that issue will resolve itself within a space of 18 months.
All right, there you have it. It's 20 minutes in the off, 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, moving to Spain, is that the Spanish government has promised an investigation into the outrages, which also affected parts of France and Portugal. Now, the National Energy Network has suggested the outrages could have been caused by the extreme temperature variations and in the interior of the country. We might take a listen to this.
Applicable across Spain and parts of Portugal and France, the electricity which keeps a modern economy humming simply disappeared. Traffic lights were out, meaning streets were soon gridlocked. In Madrid, the metro system shut down, funneling more people onto busy streets and into cars that then clogged arteries. Outside Atocha, Madrid's rail hub, thousands found themselves stranded with little idea of how to get home or get to work. Inside, the normally bustling platforms were eerily deserted. Airports fell back on emergency power supplies, but scores of flights were still grounded. That was expected to have a knock-on effect across Europe. The outage occurred around 11:30 this morning, Irish time. Play at the Calle Magica on the seventh day of the Madrid Masters tennis tournament was suspended, with fans using their mobile phones to find their way out of the stadium. The president of the Madrid region called on the authorities to implement a national emergency plan.
We're all getting information in bits and pieces, so we can't give you much more in this situation, which is so abnormal. What we are going to do is ask the government to activate Emergency Plan 3 so that the army can preserve order if necessary.
Bank machines, office computers, restaurant ovens were all affected, an expanding glitch that rippled through every aspect of life.
center?
I'm in a data center, and everything has gone off. All the alarms popped up, and now we are waiting with the groups, waiting to find out what happened. The groups can't go down. If the groups go down, all communication goes down, and it's a huge problem.
The government said it was trying to restore power and find out the cause of the outage as quickly as possible. This afternoon, the authorities said it could take several hours. As people stocked up on food in those supermarkets which still had power, the Spanish grid operator Red Eléctrica said it was working with energy companies to restore power in phases.
And Tony joins us now from Brussels. Tony, Portugal, of course, one of the countries also impacted by this, its prime minister, as well as the EU, saying that there's no indication of a cyber attack. Is it still a consideration, though?
Well, yeah, the Portuguese Prime Minister, Luís Montenegro, they're saying that he couldn't rule that out. Now, Pedro Sánchez, the Spanish Prime Minister, a short time ago said that there was no conclusive evidence one way or another what had caused this outage. But the National Energy Agency has talked about extremely high temperatures between 12 and 1 o'clock Spanish time today. And if you have very high temperatures, that limits the amount of power that can be carried on those high voltage cables, and there is some suggestion that the cables that link Spain to the European grid over the Pyrenees, that may have been shut off for a period, and that's why the outage may have been so catastrophic. Now, obviously, we are looking at potentially another major weather phenomenon and linked to this problem. We saw the huge problems in Valencia last year with the flooding. That was as a result of very high temperatures over the Mediterranean colliding with an Arctic polar front over Spain, causing that torrential rain and over 200 deaths. So I think that's going to be one of the areas the authorities are going to be looking at. Spain has been increasing its renewables to about 56% of its overall energy mix, which is a huge increase in recent years. Nuclear has been declining, fossil fuels have been down, but clearly Spain has an overall profile problem with these very high temperatures and extreme weather events.
You're better, Tony Connolly. Thank you for that.
All right, there you have it. The time is 25 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the one last update from the economic segment is that the Brody's health system, in particular, is overwhelmed. Expectant mothers have been adversely affected, with many of them being exposed to life-threatening situations. We might take a listen to this.
It can hold up to 10,000 people and is now 60% full, according to the UN's Refugee Agency. The ongoing fighting in the DRC continues to displace many more families in Burundi, which is struggling to cope with increasing numbers. Basic amenities here have been strained and stretched by the rising refugee population. Expectant mothers are among those hardest hit by the worsening humanitarian crisis.
Avant notre arrivée ici,
there were cries of alarm about the maternity system. There was only one CDS managing almost all the cases, with an insufficient number of qualified staff to deal with all the gynaeco-obstetric cases.
Many women have been forced to make the dangerous journey to Burundi just to get the basic maternity care services. This has exposed some of them to life-threatening situations. Many of them can hardly pay for the maternal care they desperately need.
First of all, it's very far to get the vaccine. You have to walk 5 kilometers beforehand. It's really tiring. Sure, the vaccine is free, but you have to pay nearly $10 for the maternity ward.
The Burundian government and aid agencies are doing their best to prevent maternal and newborn deaths and prioritize the long-term health and well-being of such women. Along with the WHO, Burundi kicked off a year-long campaign and a maternal and newborn health on World Health Day this year.
We always raise awareness among the pregnant women when they come to the CBN sessions. During this period of pregnancy, we always advise them to follow up their pregnancies with prenatal consultations so that we can diagnose any pathologies linked to pregnancy or the fetus. or to the woman herself. This is to prevent dangers during childbirth.
Despite such concerted efforts to ensure mothers deliver safely, the risk of maternal mortality still poses a challenge in the country and region. The Burundian government has been trying to secure additional land for new settlements to host refugees from the DRC. In the meantime, Congolese mothers at this camp hope they'll get a chance to restart and rebuild their lives in Burundi as they wait for peace to be restored in the DRC.
All right, there you have it. The time is 27 minutes in the of 6 o'clock. And, of course, that was it from the international segment. We'll take a listen to all of it into a very short commercial break. Then, once we return, we'll take through what is happening locally in terms of economic news.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Asherero Omainduriro, the Catholics Maneka Karunga, the Africans Sengfuar Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-2358-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Omutiha with the Krokabuna e Matina Onjo. Chicago Safata Nana, Longishifa, Yao, Shirika Moshiwana, E. Moyawa, Otaimbo Botamani, Ana Shifa, Yanamibia, on the Tombana Onjika. Saitanina Omeguro, Niranitoma, Yue, Longishifa, Okupitramo, Ekelefon Media House, where 22 Niha Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara Omashi Freki, we mopo, your boy program, and get to Moambo, Longira.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.
All right, the time is 31 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Welcome back, and if you just joined us right now, thank you so much, and a very, very good morning to you. Now, to move on, or rather to start off locally, or in terms of economic news, and of course, the trade entrepreneurship update and force policy updates, and is that the FNB Namibia through the First Rand Namibia Foundation has donated 800 mosquito nets valued at $300,000 Namibian dollars to communities in Katima Morilo to help fight the malaria outbreak in the Zambezi region. Now the donation came as the region faces a surge in malaria cases between 30 December 2020 2024 and 20 April 2025, the Zambezi Regional Directorate of Health and recorded over 17,222 cases and 701 hospital admissions and 16 deaths. Now, speaking at the handing ceremony, Richie Howeb, branch manager for FNB Namibia, reaffirmed the bank's support for the Ministry of Health and Social Services and the people of Katima Mulilo. Now, on this World Malaria Day, we stand in unity with the people of Katima Mulilo and reaffirmed our commitment to working hand in hand with the Ministry of Health and Social Services to combat malaria. That's what he said. Now, FNB through the First Rand Namibia Foundation focuses on improving the health and well-being of Namibians' community. The donation mosquito nets will primarily be given to children, the elderly and the pregnant mother, and who are more at risk in this regard. Now, the donation supports the Ministry of Health and Social Services' ongoing efforts. Now, those efforts include deploying extra healthcare workers, distributing more than 600,000 unit and anti-malaria medications, and running awareness and prevention campaigns across the region. Now, Howeb also thanked local communities for their cooperation, while the ministry's efforts have been nothing short of relentless. Now, the community members have been equally cooperative, enabling the successful implementation of crucial precautionary measures such as the mosquito population control. For that, we are truly thankful that what he said. Now, he also stressed the importance of continued collaboration to tackle the outbreak, and your health and your well-being are at the head of this gesture. Together with continued collaboration, commitment and care, we can overcome the threat of malaria and protect the future of our communities. That's what he said. Now, the Lowlands Sampofu, regional governor of the Zambezi region, echoed those sentiments. We have started to see a decline in the number of newly reported cases, with the latest recording of 1,614 cases. This has been also achieved due to a multi-central collaboration with partners, stakeholders, and community organizations. That's what he said. Now, Sampofu thanked FNB for the donation, your support to the Ministry of Health and Social Services and the community of Zambezi region have been invaluable. And going forward, we must build on the progress made and work tirelessly to overcome the remaining and emerging challenges. That's what he said. Now, FNB Namibia said it remained committed to working with the public sector to support public health and create a safer communities, and that what he concluded. Now, moving on to the next item is that the increase in high crime rate for local businesses and, of course, investment trust. In recent days, Namibia have experienced an alarming increase in children rape and murder, and there are a lot of unsolved children killings in the past 10 years. Now, maybe the answer that you can ask ourselves here is that how can the current governance structure and legal system improve the protect its people, and whether to improve to protect its people. Now, we engage with the former magistrate Thomas Kanime just to unpack this for us. We can take a listen.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. And I would like to ask your viewers, as a former magistrate or judge, what is your view on the operating children killings below 15 years?
My dear, this is a very shocking news to the entire Namibian nation.
Mm-hmm.
As a former magistrate, I went through this type of cases, and one cannot understand why only targeted these little ones, especially girls.
Mm-hmm.
Especially girls. these matters of killing are very disturbing. But we need also to put in consideration our legal system. Is it well equipped enough to tackle this type of situation? Definitely sometimes one may say not, because we are applying the old system, the old legal system.
Yeah.
We do not have a proper mechanism to control this type of situation in Namibia. That's why at the end of the day, the investigations are just end up without any truth whatsoever.
It's true. So, which means it's something uncontrollable, you cannot control it, cause...
Something serious to be done, especially when it comes to the investigators officers, police officers. They are not properly well trained, they are not properly well equipped. In a case of this magnitude, we need a well-organized investigating officers. In terms of all the resources, including transport, including probably cameras, including this model equipment that can detect, it might be the shadow of, from the scene, and also the communication between the police officers, investigating officers, and the public prosecutor. If the public prosecutor is not well trained as well, end of the day, there will be no successful case.
It's true. So, have you experienced something like this during your time at the bench, Thomas?
A lot of cases are being thrown away from the roll due to the poor investigations. At the beginning, before I was appointed as a magistrate on the bench, I was a public prosecutor. And as a public prosecutor is a person with a legal-minded experience, supervising the police officers, the one we called investigators officers. When the case appeared, when the doctor brought before me as a public prosecutor, I have to go through the docket, all the statements, and see what is in there and what is not there. And at the end of the day, when I'm going to present my case before the magistrate, I will simply either apply for a postponement so that I will put some proper instruction to the investigating officers. And if I feel that this case is of a sensitive nature and I don't want to waste the magistrate's time, I'll simply apply or make an application for the case to be removed from the roll and give more time for the state and the investigating officer to finalize for the investigation. Because if the investigations are not fully proper investigated, that will lead to Section 174 of the Criminal Procedure Act, meaning the state will have no choice, and the magistrate will pass the ruling of a person not guilty and acquitted. While, in fact, in the eyes of the public, evidence, of course, was supposed to be there, but it's not there. And the magistrate is operating on an independent body. Magistrate doesn't know what is in the docket. He doesn't speak with the prosecutor regarding the matter. It's only the prosecutor and the police officer. And the magistrate will take up the matter from there. That's why the magistrate has to hear from both sides, from the accused person to the complainant. The complainant has to submit his or her witnesses, as well as the accused person has also to submit him or her the witnesses. Then at the end of the day, when it comes to the ruling, it's up to the magistrate to decide. When it comes to the judgment, it's up to the magistrate to decide. But it must be a fairly. That's why they say there's a sentence which all must be applied by all judicial officers.
Yes. That okay, especially...
It must be treated on its own merit.
Especially, I remember...
Again, and again, the case must be, an accused person must be treated at the beginning as an innocent until final proved guilty.
Okay. So, okay, as I can remember, I had, the first murder that was done in Okahanja for the 5-year-old child. Mm-hmm. I heard that there was a small child that was giving us some information. No, there was a meme that came here. She was looking, she was wearing a bonnet and she was looking for the child. She showed us the picture of the child she was looking for when she came in our school. So that means, a small child cannot give any information or she cannot she cannot be an eyewitness or something.
Well, there is a provision in terms of our constitution when it comes to the juvenile witnesses. The minor witness must, or their evidence must be treated with the utmost careful or caution. That's why the legal system come up with a system. They can testify before court of law, but cannot be seen in public. There should be a separate room with a tendered window. The minor can view everybody in court, but you cannot see who is speaking.
Oh, yes.
He or she is protected. And in a situation of this one, those are the main key witnesses. And the witness is also tested to her ability, whether she's capable to testify or not. That's why the issue of the doctor comes in to certify this minor, whether he's capable or not. If he is mentally impaired, mentally disturbed, he obviously cannot, probably evidence cannot be used as part of the record. But if whatever the statement are from minors, are reliable, the issue of the investigating officer should come in. He has to thoroughly investigate this case. I was speaking to one parent from our page at Omakange, who interviewed one of the closer friend of him in Okahanja. I'm telling you, the information is leaking, is what is. But as we are speaking, those are just CSS statements, CSS evidence. But if there's concrete evidence linking to this particular parents or particular person, because we don't want to discuss this type of things now. And that's where we may also, at the end of the day, temper to the investigation. So those are protected. Let's give the room, the opportunity to the investigating officers to go deep into this matter. That's why these minors are from the same location, schooling in the same school, same class.
Imagine.
But even which comes in, whatever, they are saying, the learner reports herself to school, and yet she was sent back to go and put up into her uniform. My question is it applied to all the learners of NASCAR, or this only pinpoint one single child? And again, there you will see. Now, someone said the child never turned up to school. But the learners are saying, no, how come? The learner was at school. This is the school bag. Her bag is here. We are taking it from home. But the other person, that's why we are now trying to generalize him. The other person said, she did not turn up. But the bag is there. How comes the bag to be in the classroom if she's not there? Not there?
There's a lot of questions.
The learners are saying, this particular person instructed this person to go back home and put up in a school uniform. But the very same person is the one who gave a piece of paper to this learner to take it to the parents saying that we do not need to come with a uniform you have to put that in a casual way of no dressing. That's why this arena came with a casual dressing. The end of the day, again, confusing situation. Someone out there, she was sent back to her, and she did not reach home, disappeared.
Oh, yes, this guy. It's really something confusing
what I'm asking the government, they must put more, put more resources in this type of cases.
Yes, especially
it's the more they need. Why can't they contact experienced investigating officer? Those are on retirement. Or else, if these cases are coming, why can't they call people like this retiring magistrate, judges, those with experience to deal with these cases? We are there, we are ready.
Yes.
With this, we're going to appoint you for 3 months period to go and attend to all these cases.
Yes.
You think I'll say no? Because I know. I know the nature of the offense. Meet an experienced magistrate, an experienced judge. Magistrates are there, especially those who are on bench, especially those who have been in exile. They have been on the bench for 2 years, here, maybe 10, 20 years. They are there. Those who are fit, why can't they come still? Judges are there. Let them come. These newcomers. They don't pay attention to cases of this magnitude. And it's so disturbing. You see somebody arrested today, tomorrow he's walk out free. It's outcry from the public that justice is not served. But justice must be served if there are resources, if there are people with experience, if the stakeholders are also serious with the situation.
Okay, what are some motives of these perpetrators, Thomas Kanime?
The motive of the perpetrators? One might not read somebody's mind. But through my experience, there are so many things involved. Alcohol, that mainly dangerous substances. And again, this ritualist are also playing the role. Ritualist. But you cannot prove the case if you do not have anyone dealing with ritualist. Otherwise, at the end of the day, you take this person to court, not guilty, he will turn around to say, you must clear up my name. You have to pay thousand million of dollars to clear up his name. So, what led this sort of criminal cases is basically the drugs. Drugs is the main one. Alcohol, you can take one or two things, you get drunk, tomorrow you are fine. But drugs can lead you to do anything. That's why you see somebody screaming their own mother. And tomorrow when you ask him, do you know what you do? It's wrong. He said, no, I do not know. I was out of mind. So, let's hope the Minister of Justice, Minister of Home Affairs, and the Minister of Intelligence, let's step in. The intelligence guy must assist the police officer. Because intelligence guys, they are well equipped. They can penetrate the system. They can penetrate the school girls. They can penetrate the school boys. They can penetrate the teachers. They can penetrate the whole environment. Not the police officers. Intelligence must come in this case.
Okay. Lastly, Thomas Kanime, what do you think Namibians need to do or maybe to stand up on in order to stop these terrifying news from happening?
I would simply say, let us unite. A nation apart cannot reach the common goal. Let us unite in terms of assisting our people, especially our loved ones, the victims, or the mother or the father of the victims, he or she need a specialist doctor, psychologist doctor, so that they could cope up with the whatever happened. But without that, it takes us no way. And let us, all of us Namibians, especially private companies in a situation of this one, I'm appealing them to come and rescue the government. If the government need a specialist from South Africa, the government alone cannot hire that person. But if all the stakeholders comes in, then justice will be served.
Okay. Thank you so much, Thomas Kanyime, for being with us and discuss with us about this terrifying news that is happening in Okahandja. Please revert back when you are free. Thank you so much.
You are so very well welcome. My last word is just to appeal to our police officers, especially investigating officers appointed to tackle with this type of cases. If they cannot manage on their own, I'm available. They can contact me to supervise them of what they can do to fully finalize their.
All right, there you have it. Listeners, now the time is 53 minutes in the office o'clock, and that's, this is early morning script. Now you heard it from the former magistrate and Thomas Kanyime, just sharing over that, just to unpack that, cases that are happening also recently, especially the Okahandja one, there where he really just emphasized that, I mean, it's higher time, the police officers and of course the maybe the ministry also itself, to at least maybe just hire or deploy the experienced, officials and to investigate these kind of cases, of course. And, he really also just noted that, it's higher time also for them to put more effort, like where he thinks that maybe the efforts are not really been put in these cases, that they are still just continuing. So he said it's higher time also for them or the farmers at least to be approached and of course to help in this regard. Now we can move on to the next item.
Much. On our next item, we want to speak to the mayor of the Nana, that is Omlika Vanje, with regards to the local authority owed 7 million Namibian dollars by the ministries and, of course, business. Now, this was revealed by the Minister of Rural and Urban Development, James Sankwasa, during the independence celebration held in Mukwa constituency over the weekend. Now, on this, we are joined by the mayor of the town, Omlika Vanje. A very good morning to you, Mr. Kavanja, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning to you, and good morning to our listeners.
Thank you so much. We're doing great. Yeah, Mr. Kavanja, speak to us about this. Like, is this true that the town owed, or rather have the debts of about 7 million Namibian dollars by the various ministries and, of course, the businesses?
Yes, I can confirm. I can attest that what the Honorable Minister has said is correct.
All right. Now, in this regard, how did maybe the town accumulate this debt? And maybe just speak to us about the factors that have been contributed or that has contributed to individuals not paying their bills.
I first and foremost, I want to be specific. The 7 million that the minister has talked about, it's a specific owed by the ministry and OMAS. So this is the outstanding amount, over 7 million. It's a result of a combination of factors accumulated over a time. Some ministry have faced internal administrative delay in processing payment, while some residents are experiencing economic challenge that has impacted their ability to settle the municipal bill on time. Additionally to that, you can recall very well during the past years, that year that we experienced in the COVID-19 pandemic, there were financial hardship across various sectors. We which further contributed to the delayed payment, despite continuous effort from the local authority to remind and engage account holder. And these circumstances have resulted in the current debt level. So it's not a 1 year thing, it's not a 2 month thing, but it takes some time to be where is it now. It's a combination.
Okay.
Some could be before and continue from there. Some could be after. It depends.
Okay. Now, on that, perhaps now as the mayor and, of course, the town council, what measures maybe has also the town implemented just to address this depth? And, of course, I want also to understand whether these depths are ongoing or perhaps they are also reducing. So what is the situation on the ground right now?
We are closely monitoring, like indicated earlier, that it's not an easy thing. The local authority has taken proactive steps to address the situation in town. We have introduced flexible payment arrangements to assist our residents and institutions in setting their debt over manageable periods. Furthermore, we are strengthening our debt correction process through regular account follow-up, formal demands, notice. Sometimes we send an SMS. Where it's needed, we arrange a meeting, we made the consultations. We are enforcing that open door policy for our residents to always come and see the office of the CEO or the office of the mayor in this regard. When necessary, if all those options that I have stated, the legal action for pre-spend non-payment can be also taken. And the reason is not to punish. The reason is only to correct and implement the project that we plan to implement and render effective service to the community or residents. We also identified stakeholder engagement sessions several times, particularly with ministry and rights sector, to prioritize clearing their outstanding balance. But sometimes you find it people are not coming forth. People are not willing to come and discuss as to how you attend to this one, but in fact, it's to thank those that are doing it. And as a town, we have to thank them.
Okay.
Yeah, like other towns or like other institutions, our people need to understand that honoring your bill on time is very important. In as much we are demanding the service, we cannot have effective service if we are not honoring our bill on time. Whatever we are doing, whatever development or project that you run in town, it requires money. And this money will only come from the residents. So as the leadership of the town, last year we have introduced debt relief periods whereby we were written off the penalties on the debt holder's account. And we, to our disappointment, we did not receive or we did not, I mean, majority of the residents honor that period until it comes to an end. And when we look at it this year again, we say, okay, let's revive this one. Let's reintroduce it again. Because more so, it will also help us to reduce, and it will also help us, our residents, to clear up their debt. Now, we reintroduce it again, starting from March 2025 to March 2026. What are we going to do now? As we have experienced last year that majority did not use this opportunity. Now, we are now using various platforms to educate our people to understand it as to how it works. So the reason was that, no, we did not hear it. We are not aware of it. So now we reinforce community engagement social media plus other platforms that we can ensure that our people get this information on time and they are well educated. The gender disparity, yes, we not, but we'll try by all means to maintain our financial discipline.
Okay.
Thanks
okay.
so much.
All right, thank you.
Yes.
There you have it from mayor of the Emena town. Now, on that regard, we also spoke to a businessman and a researcher, Dobson Kwara, that who just shared his thoughts on why businesses, ministries, and of course individuals are not paying or are defaulting. We might take a listen to this a segment or rather, and the update.
I think this will be a turnaround kind of approach in my case. That is a political statement deriving from situation on the ground that is being which is caused by poor service and poor management of local authorities. Because what makes me to say that it's a political statement, because instead of for a politician to understand the cause of what makes people not to pay, they rush to accuse the public. In as much as we know urban areas within the local authority jurisdiction, the local authority lives on the contribution given by business community. Now, if the government does not administer people that are living within local authority area, they cannot blame the public. The government should blame itself through its Ministry of Urban and Rural Development. Lois, I'll be very honest with you. This is, local authority was not established to pamper people that are not able to adhere to the law. The local authority area have an advancement of bylaws to support their operation within their area of jurisdiction. The people of Enana wouldn't have reached 7 million if there was a proper debt collecting operations within the local authority. That this applies to any local authority that wants to claim that the public is the order. Because the establishment of every town takes into consideration service provision and the demand of payment to what they pay. I'll give you an example. If tenant, a landlord invites people to rent in his or her house, the first 3-4 months of staying in that house, they'll be paying rent. But come the 6th month, people stop paying because they will develop a relationship whereby they become more of a family, unlike becoming a service provider in accommodation. Now, after five months from the 6th month, the landlord starts complaining, says, we are not developing because my tenants are not paying me. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Obviously, it doesn't make sense. Because there is a contract that is signed between a tenant and the landlord.
Okay.
Now, once you just, respect that contract, one should move out. All actions should be taken. Now, this is a similar situation when it comes to local authority. Given the suburbs that are in that town, you have to collect debt, or you have to collect any old, outstanding, payments from the residents. Now, even if you can ask the Enana Town Council, which part of town is owing the most?
Mm.
Because it's not all suburbs. Suburbs in any town are demarcated according to a standard of class, like people that are well paid, all people that have a better living standard, they have their own location.
Mm.
We have also have informal settlement. We also have the middle class.
Mm.
That is how, so which part of Enana is owing them more? Because they cannot just do like this. Even in Vindu, our capital city, Katutura has lower rates, Kenekupe has higher rates. Given the class of even the CBD, the nature of business that you operate is the one that makes you to accumulate more in terms of services that you must pay back.
Mm.
So That is what I'll start to, you know, to add on this issue. I'm not going to be on the side of government in this matter, because government with the power then establish a platform whereby people should participate. Because this one is mainly driven by politicians. Politicians tend to disturb the operation of towns. Towns are not really designed on political grounds. Towns were designed and established on economic value.
Okay.
From business community. You must take note of this. Every town in Namibia was not politically established. It was established on economic value of that specific area. Tumep was driving from the copper. That's what you must know. Walvis Bay was driving from the docking of ships and sales, Kelly and Dolphin, sorry, well, you know, harvesting, because even a well was used as the producer of petroleum, that we use as petroleum jelly, which we call Vasilis. It's coming from the fate of wells. If you talk about blueberries, when Adolf Blueberries landed on that part of the country, he established a port and named it Angra Pequena, and later it became Blueberries under his name. Now, because of the diamond activities on that area, then it was established as a town. I'll give you the same scenario in Katima Mulo. Katima Mulo was established because the German by that time thought that they should trade using the location of Katima Mulo. Now, then South Africa, when it took occupation of Namibia, South Africa, they funded the 1964 establishment of a well-designed town. Not political measures. It was not. That's where I derive my statements when I say towns are not established on political grounds. No.
While you are there, Kwara, maybe then, according to you or your research, maybe what suggestion maybe do you have to ensure that bills are paid, especially among or within the town councils?
The minister must not come to wash hands on the community. The minister must look within his ministry what is the problem. Because all local authorities in Namibia are complaining that government does not give them the budget that they allocate to them in time. Number two, the major services, when it comes to services of areas before construction starts, like in the area of civil engineering, where you have to bring in sewer, roads, electricity, and so forth. The local authorities are complaining. The ministry does not prioritize to bring budgets in time. Number three, as I've mentioned the second one already, is that when the allocation of zoning of places in local authority, if government is given attention to approve, they take a long time. Just a small portion of land so that it can be changed into a certain name, it takes the whole year or even 2 years. The new minister of urban rural development, what he must know is that it's not politics anymore. This is about service delivery. And I think this must be well interpreted, translated to the community. We must take this word very serious. I'm even telling the minister that if he wants to develop Namibia, he must become, you know, somebody with economic value. He must not come with politics. He must call a spade a spade. What do you expect from informal settlement that does not have water to pay the bills? What do you expect, a community living in town with poor roads to pay the bills? What do you expect a community living in town to pay if their refugees are not moved in time? What do you expect if the tender that comes in does not empower the local people? How do you expect them to pay you back? How do you expect, the community to pay back when law enforcement in that jurisdiction of a town is not active? How do you expect the people to pay when the industrial development in a specific town is not, empowered? This one the minister must know. He must know that if there's a project in town coming, they must prioritize, it must take place, it must be constructed, and people must start working. All people, even the people that were staying in Katutura, they were moved from Hogland Park. Many years ago, during the liberation, before the liberation struggle, the late Mungunda was the the focus, you know, of where the whole issue of independence started. Because by that time, our late founding father was living in Vindhu. So when Mungunda was killed, then the revolution started. So if you look at that time, there was no politics. It was just, you know, the power of administration versus service delivery. Now, whites were not comfortable when the blacks were demanding whatever they wanted. So, who said, like, if we are in now an independent state, we are failing to maintain ourselves. We are failing to look at our hygiene, service delivery. Why? Urban and rural development in Namibia is the problem of the state. It's not the problem of the people. Because if you ask what you are owed, where will that person go? The people don't just go back to their villages. Let those ones who should live in town to afford the life of town life. You see, we are coming from the situation of COVID.
Yeah.
Everything was you know, everything collapsed across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether the 7 million is for the past 5 years or the 7 million is within the first year when the minister started working there. You see, the minister should not bring old stories. In his tenure, he must even address and say, I'm not going to look at old stories. I'm starting a new page.
Mm-hmm.
The minister was supposed to first look at what caused the whole issue, so that when he makes a public speech, he's able to say, despite the public owing local authority, we have realized that we as government, when I'm coming into the office, there was poor management of, you know, finances in local authority. That is what should be indicated. Number two, when you look at business community, I already mentioned it, like what empowerment is there to keep or stabilize the businesses in a specific town?
Hmm.
Yeah, if it's business community, you don't be also empowered and there's nothing that happens. And if you don't manage the number of businesses to operate in a certain industry, you are making that industry to collapse. What do I mean by that? If a town is supposed to have 1,000 cars to provide tax business, you are allowing 10,000 cars, and the business collapses, the industry collapses. That's what I mean by that statement.
Mm.
So you stick to the number of vehicles that should be spread so that the business can remain or the industry can thrive. Number two, a town was supposed to have 10 bottle stores and you allow 100 bottle stores, then the revenue is not circulating properly. That industry also... And people carry on all.
Inclusivity, transparent accountability, risk management. These are all centers of NAMCOD, and local authorities can actually create an environment where bill payment systems can become a norm. So the governance-driven approach will only improve if the revenue collection are taken seriously in order for us to ensure sustainability towards this development of this wonderful upcoming town of Enana, and also give an example to other local municipalities on how infrastructure should be a key element to grow the town.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ilunga.
Yes, thank you. Welcome.
And have a good day now, further.
Thank you. Enjoy your day as well.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, the time is 28 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop with me, Louisa Shimi. And then, of course, you there, you heard it from Joseph Ilunga, one of the governance rather analyst, where he really just emphasized the
the readership and of course the management of within the town council, just also to restructure everything to make sure that people are also paying and to find the solution or rather answers why people are not paying. That what he really just emphasized on restructuring the leadership within the town council. Now on that note, that maybe we could also just give you one of the last updates. But yet we only have about 1 minute, and I think 1 minute we cannot really give you one of the good updates that way you can able to grasp and the information or that. But what we could do is also just remind you, we Eagle FM listeners, I mean Eagle FM team, to all you to always at least visiting us or to our social media platforms, Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course the Village Newspaper page. It's always on your, or rather on your WhatsApp channel, and then that our WhatsApp channel is Eagle FM Media House. You can able to always subscribe and of course keep yourself informed wherever you go, and that you can able to get the newspaper through that way, or rather you can able to send your details to 081 241 double 4 8 1 2 41 double 4. That's a number you can able to save and get the newspaper every day it's released. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And of course, do not forget to download our app, Eagle FM app. You can find that on your Google Play Store or, of course, your App Store, just to make sure that you are also informed wherever you go or wherever you are. It doesn't matter whether you are abroad, whether you are wherever, you can able to do this. So long you have your data, you're connected to internet, you can able to just use our app, of course. And you can also able to listen to the past shows, but maybe you missed out on some of other shows. You can able just to tune in wherever you go. We have all the podcasts lined up for you. And of course, the time is 30 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and that marks our last, time. And of course, I'll be handing over to my colleague, Tate Makosha, very to take you through the unpacking of the day. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I wish you a good day ahead.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafa, Nana, Longishifa, Yai, Shivitamoshiwana, E. Moyao, Otaingo, Samani, Ana Geshifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangeka, Faith and Nina, Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupira, Mo, Ikelefem Media House, Way 22 Mimeha, Ukakombanga Nina, Kara, Omkashi Pregi, Wimopo, Yomo Programma, Letu, Moambo, Lengera. Con la gente aquí, la tunda tu mujer y jamás no está, ¿no? O a mi H. Y que le fem. Lo hay.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it in my brain, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
the views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwar Tiara, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.